it's not easy to write a story. You don't just write it and it's done. I write it and then unwrite it, is how I say it, to make more concise sentences, and do I really need this or not? And, you know, one thought per sentence, simple but meaningful sentences, a beginning, middle, and an end, and honor your subject.
Welcome to the seventh episode of the Mobile Storytelling Podcast with me, Björn Staschen in Hamburg.
And me, Wietse Vellinga in Friesland in the Netherlands. This podcast is about how to tell a story with your smartphone.
And boy, today we have a guest who knows how to tell his stories and other people's stories with his smartphone.
It's Mike Castellucci, the mastermind, journalist, cameraman, producer and everything else behind Phoning It In, a series that even won him several Emmy Awards. Welcome, Mike, and thanks for joining us.
Hey guys, couldn't be happier. Thanks. And it's a better time for me than you, so I appreciate that. Thanks.
First of all, Mike, for the ones who haven't watched you on YouTube, who hasn't seen Phoning It In, what is it?
Phoning It In, well, in the fifth largest television market in the country, which is Dallas, Texas here in the United States, you know, 5 years ago, or I guess maybe six now, my boss came up to me and she said, "Hey, we're really strapped with our camera folks. Do you think you could go out and do a story by yourself, a 2-minute story for the evening's broadcast? And can you use only your phone?" And I said, "I don't know. I have no idea." So I cobbled some stuff together and went out. And it was a world famous artist who was in town. They wanted me to do a story on him. And the artist and I started talking. And after a while, he looked around and he said, "Is your camera person coming? Audio man? Sound person?" And I said, "No, you know what? We're just gonna do it on my phone today." And he was visibly underwhelmed. But I said, just trust me, see how it goes, and then after the broadcast, we'll talk. So fast forward until after it aired, the phone rings, and he says, "Okay, I get it." So it worked out okay. It wasn't spectacular, but I knew then that I could get the basics that would be good enough for broadcast and use only my phone. I hadn't heard of you all in Europe about doing this. This was brand new to me and everybody. Phoning It In, me taking everything to the extreme, I started doing not only 2-minute stories, but then I started doing half-hour shows called Phoning It In specials, and just by myself. And that's how Phoning It in a long answer was born.
Give us an idea. How do these half-hour shows look like? Do they air on regular television?
Yep, they air on WFAA. It's the ABC affiliate in Dallas. And in fact, the pieces that go into that show that we'd air, you know, prior to that on a regular news broadcast go all over the country. These are stories and specials that air all over.
And do you actually do everything yourself? I mean, I introduced you as the mastermind of it all, but do you really do everything yourself? Research the whole package?
Yeah. So there's the thing that differentiates, because on the first Phoning It In, we promoted it at the station as a broadcast first. Sort of hard to have broadcast first these days, but we knew that, at least in our country, that no one had done a half-hour show using only one phone and one person. It was done completely just by myself, and I still do them by myself with one phone.
Yeah. You know, you can use your phone to tell stories. Just one phone, different angles, from like here, here, not here, that's unflattering.
Look, I just want to talk on mine right now.
Do you see how natural you just said that? You're not intimidated by like a big TV production or anything. It's just me and my phone and you, our day-long relationship. It's a perfect recipe for storytelling.
Can you take us through your setup, what your gear is like when you go out to shoot?
Oh, I mean, is it, I guess, you know what I've found is all of us in this community of mobile journalists, I'm surprised to learn and see when I get together with you folks that everybody has a little different setup. So I guess it's not too repetitious to tell you what my setup is because it's a little different, I guess. And so I usually use, and I have been using Beast Grip or Beast Cage since the beginning. And I 95% of the time have a wide angle lens attached because the view is nicer. And what I've even found is...
Which lens is it? Which lens do you use?
A wide angle lens with the Beast Grip. Usually.
Oh, the Beast Grip wide angle.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. Or a Moment, now that Moment lenses mm-hmm. can attach to a Beast Grip, which is really, a Beast Cage, which is really cool. It's a brand new Beast Cage that just came out. But what I've found is, people will ask me, well, why do you put a wide angle lens on when you have an iPhone 11 Pro that has a wide angle lens? I find that the wide angle lens on the 11 Pro is just a little too wide. So, I'll do something in between, and then I'll use the 11 Pro wide-angle lens for a couple of shots. But you can't use that 11 Pro wide-angle lens constantly. That's why I use an attached wide-angle lens. And then past the lenses, I have a Sennheiser AVX wireless microphone that I plug in to the phone and a tripod. Oh, and then a Rode little shotgun microphone, and I'll just use that, unplug that, plug the AVX in if I'm talking to someone, and unplug it if there's some natural sound going by that I need. I think that's basically it.
It's edited quite quickly, many pictures, like many different angles. So sometimes you might get the idea that you use more than one phone. Is it always one phone?
Yeah, always one phone, except for one story that I've done, and that was with a buffalo that lives in a house.
Oh, yeah, and, we've seen that one.
Okay, I had I had an old iPhone 5 that the screen was cracked, and I just thought, you know, I'm going to set this on the ground so I could get the buffalo walking by, and if he steps on it, fine.
So after you get comfortable with a buffalo roaming in a home,
I'd love to have had a picture of that one.
It's easy to see this isn't about a 2,500-pound house pet scratching the hardwoods.
Hello?
It's a love story.
Oh, yeah, I love him. We're best friends.
It's respect both ways.
Really? You gonna lick my purse?
It's that simple.
Mama should have moved it, huh?
And when you realize that, the unbelievable suddenly becomes easy to understand.
Coming back to maybe the beginning, is why go for a phone? Why not use like a small DSLR or something like that?
Well, that's because I've been a reporter for all of these years, and when my boss first told me to go out and shoot a story, she actually said with your phone, because I didn't know how to use anything else. I had a phone in my pocket, and when she asked me to go do that, I knew that the only thing that I really needed was to make sure the audio was good and different than a phone. So the engineers and I cobbled together that little adapter from an XLR on one end that all of our microphones have to, at that point, the headphone jack, you know. So,
right, yeah.
Back then, 6 years, I don't know if they even were available. I guess maybe they were, but now they're, you know, you just type in cord from XLR to a phone in Amazon, and there you have it.
And is it kind of more than a gimmick now for you? I mean, you know, it's your brand. You shoot it all on a phone. But is it more than that? Do you see that you get different stories, different angles? So what are the advantages of shooting with a phone for you?
Well, you're right. You know, especially during this pandemic, I've seen TV stations and groups have to pivot and use phones or whatever they have, you know. So at first I was worried, hey, this is, you know, I've got my own little brand going here. Is this going to make it obsolete? And I think looking on the positive side, I don't think that's happening. I think I still do something that, at least here in this country, that people just don't do or they don't do well. And so I think the phoning it in brand, in fact, we want to expand it to all of the Texas TV markets instead of just the one. But I think it is still, you know, my brand that works because it's my brand of storytelling as well.
How is the response from the general public?
Yeah, you know, at first, 5-6 years ago, every story that I aired on the news, the anchors would preface it by saying, and here's a story on a buffalo from Mike, shot only on his phone. You know, they would actually say that and it would be a graphic. After a while, they stopped saying that. We stopped saying it. And now I find great amusement of entering awards that I'm on the same playing field as everybody else, using the $80,000 cameras and journalists. And, you know, and so I win. And so that's been fun and continues to be.
So what makes you kind of stand out if it's not the phone? So what is the kind of storytelling core? What are you after with your phone? What is possibly even easier to get with a phone?
Yeah, that first gentleman that I told you about, the artist who was visibly underwhelmed, he was literally the only one that I've come across. In all of the years since, people seem, and I'm sure you've heard this answer from others, but people seem more at ease when I show up. It's almost like they're thinking, wait, he's just got a phone, so do I. What harm could he do? And it just makes it more intimate. And I just recently traveled across Texas. It was a 12-hour trip in this guy's pickup truck looking for tornadoes. And he's a storm chaser. And I could never have done that with a regular camera. I mean, I just had, you know, a little tripod in the truck, and we traipsed across North Texas and got out, and, you know, all of that. So people always ask me, what are the disadvantages? And I never come up with any.
So none. You would say no disadvantage. I mean, what about sound? It's difficult to record three or four persons in good quality when they are speaking at the same time. How do you come around that, for example?
I think it's a little, I use the hockey player analogy. You know, hockey players, their concern is to get the puck in the net. They don't think about skating. If you are thinking about skating, you're never going to get the puck in the net. So I've just done it so long that when people say, wait, you only had one mic, but you had 18 people talking there. I missed some things. And then I put the microphone on the other person and missed some other things. But, you know, if you know what you want and what you need and what you didn't get out in the field, then you'll figure it out in editing and still create a good story.
You told us that you're going to expand the phoning it in brand. Do you see that the mobile journalism in general is growing in the U.S. apart from what you're doing?
So I don't know. What's the answer to that? I'd like to ask you guys what your feelings are. You know, like I said, during this pandemic, a lot of people have had to use their phones for different things. Even national shows, even late night shows have been using, you know, they used phones for a while from their house, albeit that there are 100 people behind the scenes and, you know, 40 iPhones or iPads or whatever, not just one and one person. But I don't know if things are going to get back to normal after this pandemic in the broadcast industry, or if this will change things forever, maybe a little of both.
Yeah, because how is filming for you now during Corona? You tell very personal stories where you have to get close to people. That's not very possible now, is it?
I just did it in Detroit there. I went there a few days ago, and there were protesters out. And, you know, I think it's just being careful. I was able to put a wireless microphone on a person, and we both had masks on. And then when we took it off, I made sure that I, you know, disinfected it properly and all of that good stuff. And I haven't been doing it day to day like a lot of my other colleagues have in the TV industry, because I'm in the summer of in between college classes. But I don't think it really changes at all. I think storytelling is storytelling. You know, in fact, when our broadcast group early on said that we, you know, you can't get within 20 feet of somebody with a microphone, I mean, how in the world are you going to tell a story? Well, that's when I published that audio hack with Filmic Pro that, you know, most of these people have AirPods or some sort of Bluetooth device, and you can actually make that into a wireless microphone. And I shared that with our station group, and they're able to use it. Now I think they're back to being able to at least put microphones, you know, closer. So
it's just, and what do you hear from your colleagues that now that they had to use their phones, and it wasn't only the exotic mic that was going out with his phone, but they had to use it too. Do you think that some of them will adopt it, or do you think they will go back to what you called kind of normal, kind of big camera crew shooting like it was before? It is also an economic question, isn't it? And advertising revenue is going down, so there might be a second corona-induced reason for shooting more with a phone.
I think what I've seen is the people who've been in this business, I think they'll go back to the way that they've been doing it. However, the new people coming in, the 1 and 2 year MMJs, the multimedia journalists that do everything on their own, I think they're more apt to use an iPhone kit. In fact, 150 station group here, it's the biggest station group here in this country, Nexstar, they asked me to join their group-wide webinar and talk about how I do it. And then most recently, they just sent 150 iPhone kits to each station. So things are changing.
You also teach journalism at Michigan State University. Do you teach these new journalists to use just their smartphones, or what do you do?
Yeah, in fact, it saved us, and it won them a national award out of 250 entries from universities across the country during this pandemic. When we learned that we couldn't be face-to-face anymore, and all of our students spread out throughout the state, we just became the biggest newsroom in the state, because they all knew already how to use the iPhone kits from previous classes. They all had them, and when we asked them to do stories, each of them was able to find a story in the town that they were in, and then we put it together, and it was the newscast. The first one after all of this happened won the highest award in the country.
What is your recommendation to your students and our listeners as well? What is most important when you tell a story with your smartphone? What are your kind of five tips, your five central learnings?
Well,
or four or six.
I have a t-shirt that says technology changes, storytelling never will. So whatever your gear is, just make sure that you know it, first of all, so you don't have to worry about it. It's that hockey player analogy. And then as far as storytelling goes, I mean, I'm still learning. And it's hard for me to write a story. And I know that I'm not alone, because the two top storytellers here in the country, his name is Boyd Huppert and Steve Hartman, each of them say that it's not easy to write a story. You don't just write it and it's done. I write it and then unwrite it, is how I say it, to make more concise sentences and do I really need this or not? And, you know, one thought per sentence, simple but meaningful sentences, a beginning, middle, and an end, and honor your subject.
What does that mean, honor your subject?
I do, all of my stories are related to the human condition. I tell my students that that building being built across the street, you don't want to go do a story on the building being built. You want to know the little store owner next to that big building being built, how that's going to affect him or her. And so every story should be about a human being. We're all humans, and all of us just want to relate to each other and have a good story told to us. So when I say honor a subject, I mean the person that you focus on, and you have to focus on one or two people, in my opinion, in my brand of storytelling. Honor them, be curious about them, write about them and what they're going through, and we can all relate.
And is that, in your opinion, the way forward for journalism in general, that we should focus more on the personal?
Absolutely. To me, that's the only, that's the reason we do this, is if you honor your subject and you tell a story about someone, the viewer is hopefully going to be inspired by that story and inspired to action of some, of whatever it is. And that's the job of a journalist, isn't it? To serve and not necessarily inspire, but that's what my side likes to do.
But then to play the devil's advocate, some say this constant stream of personalizing stories leads to people like Trump, because we don't get to the complex ideas behind things if we personalize everything. What is your view on that?
I think that at least the people that I feature, it's all about the good of humankind, and only good can come from a story like that. These are ordinary people doing extraordinary things, and we might not hear from them again, ever. And so all of us can relate to something like that. I think it's worthy of a broadcast, of a news show.
I also try to focus on personal stories, but if I tell my colleagues this, I always get a lot of pushback. Because they want to know what the officials are saying about that same story. Even though the ratings prove them wrong, it's a very conservative field, journalism. How do you think I can convince them?
Here's a good example. I have never convinced them. I just have done it. And then when I'm ready to air the product, you know, they'll say, oh, okay. Here's a great example. It's just been the anniversary. In Dallas 4 years ago, 12 police officers were shot. 5 were killed. Huge story that demands, like you said, officials. The next day, I wasn't assigned a story, but there was a huge prayer vigil in downtown that next day at noon. All of our crews were out doing this. You know, they were trying to get microphones on the podium, and there were officials after officials after officials on the podium. And so I just went down there at lunch with my phone, and I thought, okay, all of these other crews are getting the officials. I'm going to look for something non-official. And as soon as I walked up there, I just observed, there was a gentleman that had a t-shirt on that said, "Free hugs." And I just watched him for a while. And then I said, "Hey, can I put a microphone on you?" Observed him and shot him for a while. And police officers were coming up to him and hugging him and crying. And so that was the story. So I did it. And submitted it, and they made it the lead at 6 p.m. in front of eight other crews that went out and did the officials.
So the personal story won.
It sure did. Yeah. I mean, all they had to do was look at it. You know, and then, yeah, of course, there were official sound bites from you know, the police chief and then this and that, but it didn't have the impact of relating to another human being. Officials never will. Officials and sports figures will never, you'll never get that.
Mike, we hear quite a bit of background noise where you're talking. Might that be lunch being set up in the U.S.?
I think it was, and I'm missing it.
You see, so we might kind of come to the natural end of our little talk with you. Thank you very much for joining us, Mike. That was the seventh episode of our mobile storytelling podcast with me, Björn Staschen, in Hamburg.
And me, Wietse Vellinga, in Friesland, in the Netherlands. If you like what you hear, please share our podcast, and you can find us on all major platforms.
Thank you very much for being with us, Mike, and thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.